When we launched our investigation into human trafficking, we knew the facts, but we didn't know the stories. In the course of this month's WGBH investigation, Underground Trade, reporter Philip Martin brought us stories from Boston and around the world, stories of people being exploited into prostitution and labor trafficking. Some parts of the series were sad, others difficult to listen to, but today, Philip concludes his series with some hope and possible solutions.
To make a dent in human trafficking, some have taken heroic steps, like the cab driver in Saigon who rescued 11 and 12-year-olds enslaved in garment factories. These children should not be working like this, he said. They should be at home with their families and in school. Another way to chip away at human trafficking begins with a tip to police and ends in a raid at a Wellesley spa and an indictment against the owners.
She did tell law enforcement that she knew that also what are known as happy ending massages was being offered at that.
Or you organize against organized crime, as activist Ben Savasti did in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Right down there is where young girls are forced to receive multiple customers every night. If they refuse to, they are punished, beaten, burnt with cigarettes.
Savasti and his organization, Trafcor, succeeded in shutting down this notorious brothel. But for every success story, the underground trade finds new ways to exploit women, men, and children, many of whom are immigrants. Arlen Vanderbilt is a San Francisco vice detective. He says the bar for proving human trafficking is set high.
Felony charges for pimping and pandering or human trafficking require that we demonstrate that the trafficker or the pimp is benefiting financially from those transactions and knowingly.
And so traffickers hide behind seemingly legitimate businesses like nail salons and massage parlors, says Vanderbilt.
So in terms of bringing a case to a court of law, if we arrest a proprietor for pimping, of course, it wouldn't even get past the DA, but let's say we tried to bring it to trial. The defense would be, I have the woman here to give massages.
So how do you make a lasting impact against well-funded, well-trained, and dangerous criminals? Here are some ways to derail the underground trade. First, pass stronger state and federal laws. U.S. Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney is urging passage of legislation that would do on the national level what the State Department does globally. Publish annual reports that assess how each state is doing in fighting human trafficking.
I know that in the civil rights movement, we boycotted states that weren't moving in the right direction and respecting human dignity. We could do the same thing with states that are not really responding to the need to crack down on what we call the 21st century form of human slavery.
Second, reauthorize the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, which was first passed in 2000 and has been reauthorized three times. Now it's stalled. Third, make it more difficult for Americans to go overseas for prostitution. Ken Fratzblau of Equality Now says sex tourism fuels demand and demand fuels human trafficking.
When we would talk to non-governmental organizations in sex tourism destination countries, when we asked them what could we do to help, the response would often be stop sending your sex tourists.
But right now, there's little that can be done on the state level, at least in Massachusetts. The new anti-trafficking law doesn't cover sex tourism. Attorney General Martha Coakley.
We can't control any activity of people outside Massachusetts. So buying sex would be dictated by the location in which that happens. But that's where our federal partners come in.
Fourth, pass comprehensive immigration reform. Louis C. DeBaca is U.S. Ambassador at Large to Combat Trafficking.
As part of the president's proposals on comprehensive immigration reform is the notion of reforming the guest worker programs so that they're not only protected and there's more labor inspection and other types of protection like that, but also so that they are more able to fit the employers. As long as we don't have that, we're going to have human traffickers who are exploiting the cracks in the system.
Fifth, urge businesses to take a zero-tolerance approach to slavery in the supply chains, as Virgin Airlines executive Richard Branson has sworn to do.
Today, I'm delighted to be able to sign this pledge on behalf of all the Virgin group of companies, and I would urge other businesses to do the same.
Six, connect the dots of the underground trade between New York and other cities, including Providence and Boston. Jimmy Lee of the New York-based group Restore says law enforcement should concentrate on the alleged links between organized traffickers who transport women to New England, but who start off in New York.
They have networks throughout the East Coast along the 95 corridor that bring them to other cities, but it's the natural starting point.
Seventh, activists argue that states, including Massachusetts and New York, should make it more difficult to license and operate massage parlors. Fran Gao is with the New York Asian Women's Center.
These businesses are filled with Asian women who don't have the language skills. When they come, they were put in these workplaces. What I've seen is that a lot of the victims of sex trafficking are, in fact, Asian.
But Providence, Rhode Island police detective Mike Correa says traffickers know how to get around licensing provisions.
They skirt the need for actual, you know, a license to give massages by just careful advertising, where they don't they don't say that they're giving licensed massages. It's more body works. They refer to, you know, body works or back rubs, that type of a thing. It's kind of a careful use of advertising words, I suppose.
And eighth, increased funding for fighting human trafficking. Though Massachusetts in 2011 passed a comprehensive anti-human trafficking law, police still lack the necessary resources. Kelly Nee is a Boston Police Deputy Superintendent and a member of the state's anti-trafficking task force.
These are expansive, in-depth investigations, and we really are short on resources. You know, they're time-intensive, and they're multi-jurisdictional. Even though the focus might be a human trafficking case, there's a myriad of other crimes that often intersect with it. Organized crime, drug trafficking, guns, weapons, all of that. So you need not only multi-dimensional investigators, but you need more investigators that can help do the bigger picture cases. And I think I can speak for the Boston police as well as myself. You know, we're inundated with cases.
And even as I conclude this series, another Boston cop, Sergeant Donna Gavin, is investigating massage parlors in the area for prostitution, trying to see where the dots connect between here, New York, and overseas.
A lot of women from Southeast Asia that we've noticed, and we've had cases involving them.
And as I wrap up this series, a former Brandeis University student from Vietnam named Van Tha is racing through China with two Vietnamese girls he's just rescued from a brothel.
I felt that, you know, we wanted to do something to free the kids.
And a month after I interviewed him, a limo driver in New York is rethinking his view of the consequences of sex tourism.
I didn't realize it going into it. All you see is the lights, the pretty lights, the beautiful women, and you don't realize what's behind it.
And at the conclusion of this report, a former victim in Boston.
I was 14 when it started, and just the guy who I thought was my boyfriend at the time forced me into. Now I've come to terms with it, and now I'm working with a great organization, My Life, My Choice.
And a survivor of sex trafficking in Vietnam. Are both getting on with their lives, working for the very organizations that help them by helping others to escape the underground trade. Philip Martin, WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
And we invite you to learn more about human trafficking and listen to stories you may have missed. It's all online at WGBHnews.org. Underground Trade was edited by WGBH's executive editor, Ted Canova. Production help from Antonio Oliart, Alan Mattis, Jane Pippick, James Donahue, and Tina Toby. Online support from Brendan Lynch, researcher Jennifer Salidas, and photos by Meredith Nierman. The series is part of our collaboration with the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University and the International Center for Journalists. Support for NPR comes from the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, offering treatment options to patients fighting complex or advanced stage cancer. Learn more at cancercenter.com. Rhodes Scholar, with educational travel adventures to 150 countries, including Cuba this winter. And the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology.
I'm Callie Crossley. Today on Boston Public Radio, it's This Old House. Master plumber Richard Trithewey and contractor Tom Silva are taking your calls. That's today at noon on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is made possible thanks to you and White Oak Cottages at Fox Hill in Westwood, providing assisted living services in a home environment for those with Alzheimer's disease or other memory impairment. When your loved one can't remember your address, you can remember this one, whiteoakcottages.com.